This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and acknowledge their ongoing connection to land, waters and culture. Colonization and genocide are ongoing projects that continue to this day. Sovereignty was never ceded and this always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hey, what's up? Welcome back to Auspol Stack Pod, the podcast where we serve you up bite-sized chunks of Australian politics and news with a side of crispy memes, and today, a fresh Corona. Crack one open yourself.
We are actually drinking Coronas right now.
Yeah, Noon never drinks beer, and he was like, oh, I kind of feel like a Corona. I specifically drove him to the shop so we could get some.
Zach was like, I'm not going to let this opportunity pass. No. Noon wanted an alcohol.
I hope you'll share a frosty one with us. My name is Zach Lesnack. I am a mod on the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group, which is a Facebook group that we are the official podcast of. And joining me is the admin creator and
main poster of photographs of the newspaper.
So many low res snaps.
Every single phone I've ever got has a terrible camera. Hey, I'm Noon. I'm all that stuff Zach just said.
A.K.A. I know Funkenstein.
Yeah.
Good week to be talking about Australian politics. Lots been going on.
Australia really the focus of the world right now.
Yeah, as far as I know, there's not much happening elsewhere in the world. Although I did actually hear a bit of breaking news. Apparently a young man named Borny Sandors has won some kind of pageant.
Right. Zach told me before the show that he had a fresh Bernie joke that he was gonna give a shot at, and that he wanted to get my fresh, authentic reaction. So here it is. That was it just now. That's already happened. Yeah.
Generally spike Noon's attempts to talk about any poll that isn't Auspol. Mm-hmm. But we've got a shitpost of the week that is kind of a bit of a crossover that I thought, you know, I'll let Noon have this one. Now it's time for
Shitpost of the Week.
Yeah, so this shitpost, the layup assist goes to Nis Harkness. I believe it's their first shitpost of the week or layup assist. So thank you,
Nis, looking out
for your contributions. They've been posting some other stuff this week. And so this is a tweet that they posted a screen cap of. The tweet's from John McGowan. It says, Auspol Bernie stands. Duma, ex-Green, disgruntled. Junkie contributor, but secretly 45. Auspol Warren stands, Young Labour, DJ Albo Spotify playlist, also stands Christina Keneally, and then Auspol Yang Gang, Citizens Electoral Council voter, hates 5G, wears a bucket hat. Some quality stuff.
As a dyed-in-the-wool Bernie supporter, I resent the implication that I'm 45. Obviously, if I could be, I would. Likewise with the junkie contributor.
Yeah, I mean...
how do you feel about your characterization as a diehard Andrew Yang fan?
I resent that aspersion.
Yang Gang for life!
Yeah. I did read a bunch of the Citizens Electoral Council policies.
I was writing the notes for the show. Yeah. Trying to get the shit down, and Noon was just going like, through the Wikipedia,
they think Jews run the British monarchy and also the drug trade.
And that the Liberals were started by...
Hitler supporters, which possibly not wrong.
We were, as a nation, politically quite pro-Nazi until the mid-30s.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that's earlier to get out of the game than the United States. But whatever. Speaking of getting out of the United States, let's get into our entree.
Some Auspol, yeah.
So we've had our own little... disgusting
Iowa primary equivalent. It's been at least as much of a schlamozzle.
Oh, it's awful. This filthy little it's been a gross week in Canberra. So I guess probably the place to start would be Bridget McKenzie stepping down, which happened like an hour after we posted our last episode,
being like it seems like she's in there for a while. I thought it was very kind of our listeners not to mention that at all.
We did get one or two comments on the Discord, but people spun it. They spun it positively. They were like, "Oh, it's good because we got to discuss like what it would be like." So, very
We have supportive listenership.
Yeah, very favorable reading of that. But yeah, she resigned. She fell on her sword. The Liberal government is obviously trying to quarantine the damage of this particular issue to a single individual as opposed to letting it spread and infect the rest of the party. Should I stop doing this
analogy? No, please, keep going. I was just going to make an extended disease joke about how the rot spread. She was the deputy leader and resigned, but it contaminated the entire leadership team and resulted in a national leadership spill.
Yeah, I love that the deputy resigned and then Barnaby Joyce was like, I'll probably go for leader.
I mean, why not? Yeah, it's not like that. There's any reason to do this whatsoever.
There's a lot of nationals politicians kind of seeing one thing and trying to pretend that it's another thing as well. Like with Matt Canavan being like, I'm going to offer my resignation to support Barnaby.
Which I don't need to do in the slightest, but also I'm probably also guilty of something like Bridget McKenzie did, so I resigned for that too. But it was really for Barnaby.
Yeah. Really, really bad cover there, Matt. So he's out.
The journalism around that was also really bad. Like the ABC was like going completely uncritically being like, it's to support Barnaby. And like, I think Lisbeth, friend of the show, Lisbeth Latham, pointed out in the group that people do often resign if they're supporting a leadership spill, if they're in cabinet. But I don't think it's so important when you're the Nats. And also, people only do shit when it's self-serving regardless. Like, there's... Yeah.
Absolutely. He knew he was going to get busted, and this is the... he's probably been sitting around absolutely just sweating balls.
Totally, knowing that this has been coming. Yeah.
That somebody is going to find him out, waiting for a moment to, like, slip it under the radar.
Totally.
And thanks, Australian media. Great job. You know, I really hate this expression when they say it in the media. Oh, we just let this one go through to the keeper. Shut up. You don't care about cricket. Fuck you. But in this case...
That did happen.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Until I find a better non-sporting analogy for that phrase. Anyway, you guys did a bad job. There you go. How's that for coin a phrase for you?
The Nats did a slightly less bad job. Honestly, I was pleasantly surprised that Barnaby didn't win.
Yeah, like it would have been funny, but in a very depressing way.
Well, the main reason that I wanted him in was that apparently Scott Morrison was calling around the previous night being like, you can't fucking
please
let Barnaby get
in,
he's just going to be terrible.
Yeah.
And it's been interesting, like all of the like ABC commentators and stuff being like, I thought everyone had not forgotten any of the bad things, but have entirely forgotten all of the good part of when he was leader, but like the sexual assault / harassment stuff, the like saying God was the reason there was a drought video. It's just been a shit show for the last 3 years
or so. He's an absolute mess, but I think that it's very easy for people, especially people in the media, to confuse getting coverage with being an effective politician. Yeah, and Barnaby gets headlines, whereas Michael McCormack, who was returned as leader with David Littleproud, who is the second most bland national, as deputy, both of those guys are pretty much like anathema to the media. They're just dead on arrival in terms of media performance.
You mentioned before about Matt Canavan looking for an opportunity to slip stuff under the radar, and I really feel like that's what happened with the Greens as well, which is kind of the other half of this entree.
The one thing I wanted
sorry,
just literally 1 second before we get off the Nats is that we're talking about Bridget McKenzie and Matt Canavan resigning their cabinet positions, but these people are still MPs getting paid an MP salary. So we're talking about resigning, it's more like taking a slight demotion. I don't even know if you get paid more to be a member of cabinet than an MP.
I think you do, but yeah, you also get paid for being on more committees and stuff. Like, they're not short on cash.
They are going to be totally fine, and like I do feel
it's
like
the prestige, that's the only hit that they take.
But I think it's kind of misleading to refer to it as a resignation.
Yeah
It's like you're recusing yourself from a particular role that is further to your job.
Yeah,
you're taking yourself off the like group assignment that was for extra credit or what. I didn't go to a proper uni, but you know, I've never done a group assignment in my life. But anyway, that's enough on the Nats.
The Greens, Richard Di Natale resigned, and
which did that kind of come out of nowhere for you?
Yes and no. Like, I think everyone kind of knew his tenure was limited, like that it was nearly time, and after the last election they didn't get any gains, and like there was a bunch of seats that they targeted that they completely whiffed.
There
and...
was talk about him resigning like on election night.
And I think like we do sometimes see that, like Bill Shorten basically resigned on election night. I think it was like officially 2 days later or something, but like I think it's a bit more normal for the opposition, or like for other parties, to like take a moment, figure shit out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they picked kind of a good moment in some ways, in that like there was a lot of problems with the Greens leadership stuff. Like obviously there's a lot of a big push to democratize the leadership selection process.
So currently it's just decided by the people who are in parliament. So that's like 11 people total, I think.
Which was how the Liberal and Labour parties did it up until very recently. And they both introduced membership ballots basically to stop leadership spills happening. Mm-hmm. Not actually because they're interested in democracy, but because it makes it such a big hassle. And the people who do the spill are way less guaranteed to get support. So it's basically just like a way to cover the ass of the current leader. But the Greens have a way more like engaged membership, I think, than those other two parties.
For sure.
And there's been this like debate about leadership going on for years and years and years and years. And kind of ironically, Adam Bandt has been a big supporter of a democratic movement, but like that's also because he's like an extremely popular member in the biggest Greens seat and city in the country. So still,
but basically, they have plans to introduce this, I think, in May.
Yeah.
So Di Natale stepping down at this time does look pretty conspicuous, almost like a bit of a fucking stitch up.
Right.
So that Bandt, who is clearly the
the popular favorite,
The prodigal child, coming in, basically doesn't have to compete for his role. And like, realistically, I think it's pretty likely that he would he'd get voted in if it was a democratic process. But he wouldn't have been without his challenges. I think probably the next most likely contender would have been Maureen Faruqi.
Mm.
And she was tweeting a lot this week, basically being like, we should definitely have democratic processes.
Yeah.
I've been advocating for this in the party for a long time. She's probably the next most visible, maybe after Sarah Hanson-Young. So there's definitely discontent in the ranks among the Greens, and it'll be interesting to see what happens come May. Or if, you know, anybody else in the party is like, hey, maybe I'll have a crack at the leadership. But obviously, like, internal division has been something that's fucked them over royally.
Yeah,
At a
Batman situation.
State level especially, over the last few years. So, like, you know, maybe people will just kind of toe the party line for the meantime. We've got Bandt in. He is bolshier than Richard Di Natale.
Yep.
He is more progressive, and he has come out on his first day as leader and talked about wanting a Green New Deal, and he then said a bunch of stuff that doesn't really actually constitute a Green New Deal. I think the first thing he said was including dental care under Medicare, which
I mean, it's a great idea and we should be doing it.
Absolutely. Is it a Green New Deal? No. Like, I think
debatable.
The top line there, the New Deal is? But anyway, I think it's probably good in the long run, but it doesn't look great for their kind of like internal processes, which we know has been a huge problem for them.
On that note, regular listeners will know I have a deep love-hate relationship with Left Renewal, the anti-Greens page. I got a top fan badge recently, which, you know, mixed react.
That's
there.
A bittersweet.
Yeah. Mm. But like, they're like, oh, what about this democratic election and shit? But like, the Labour Party didn't hold a ballot for their most recent leadership spill, even though they've now introduced rules that say that they should. And like, this is a situation that they don't have to. Like, I think, I can't remember exactly how it works, but like, he got in unopposed in the party room or something. I can't remember the details about that. But like, it's not like the other parties are actually being democratic in any way. And like, the Greens should be better than them.
Well, that's it. It's the disappointment of expecting more of the one nominally progressive party that we've got, and being disappointed time and again when they, you know, behave like a pretty regular political organization. But look, you know, slight disappointment might be the best flavor that we've got at the moment. So I guess give me two scoops. There's a little snack pun for you. Is that enough on that?
Yeah, let's move on.
Cool. You want to take this one, Noon? This is our First Nations story for the
week. Yeah, so this is quite a nice one. The Yamachi Nation down in Western Australia have reached a landmark native title agreement and an indigenous land use agreement. So normally these are two things that would happen separately, and they both happened together. And the native title thing is that there were four different groups who all had sort of overlapping claims. Yeah, so like this, I don't think it was like 100% overlapping, but there were areas that overlapped, and they, over the last like 20 years, have been negotiating with one another and the state and federal governments, and have finally reached this agreement. And so there's a few different things. So one is that they now have a recognition of native title, there's a bunch of benefits that go along with that, but also the Indigenous Land Use Agreement, which gives first traditional owners a bunch more access to land. So, for example, people can basically go and live off the land there if they're part of the four Yamachi clans. Mm-hmm. And they're also there's a settlement that is worth about $450 million, which part of that is just a straight cash payment that I think will be distributed by the land councils. But there's also stuff like they're getting money to put into education and training and into capital investment, so that there might be some businesses owned by the Yamachi Corporation, and a bunch of other stuff. So more indigenous ranges, more traditional land management practices, and also that they'll get a portion of revenue from stuff like mining and other industry on the land.
Mm. So, which brings me to one of the sort of issues with this agreement, which is that the First Nations people don't have control over access to the land, so they can't stop anybody coming in, which means you still will have, or it's still possible that extractive industries could come and operate in those areas.
Absolutely.
You might have, as you say, like a greater chunk of profits from those industries going to the land councils, but there's obviously still issues with this agreement, and there are people who have broader issues with the native title system in general.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just something that we don't really have time to go into at the moment, but maybe is a topic for a future episode. But it's all in all, that's definitely good news.
Absolutely,
it's a long time in the works. Mm. And it's a great, like, the result of collaboration and unity amongst a bunch of different groups.
Yep.
So that's very cool.
Should we move on to our next segment?
Fashy Australia.
I'm going to swig down some of this.
Yeah,
it's just so you can all hear those coronas in disgusting detail.
That's good radio.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of good radio.
Mm-hmm. that's a good tie-in.
That is good. Okay. So it came to light this week that a court, and this is the description of this person given in a Herald Sun, suspended Frankston cop and failed poly Michael Lamb. Harsh, coming from your natural allies.
Of both suspended Frankston cops and failed polys, yeah.
Michael Lamb was a Liberal candidate running in the Victorian seat of Frankston. And this was in last year's state election, and he was running on a tough on crime thing. It was African gang shit. That was the only thing that the Liberals had in their pocket last year, and they tried to play it hard.
And then they got hit with the lobster with a mobster situation. Yeah. Which was, yeah.
Man, it's oh boy, this country is stupid as shit.
Uh-huh.
And our politics is really dumb.
Yep.
But so Michael Lamb, running on a tough on crime platform in Frankston, turns out that he's been accused, allegedly of backgrounding information with crime statistics straight from the police force to a right wing shock jock on 3RW, which is a Melbourne radio station. So he's facing four charges of illegally disclosing police information. The Liberals working hand in hand with the cops.
Mm-hmm.
That's sick. That's obviously awesome. Yep. Right wing
journalists. Weird how those two organizations that are both coincidentally full of white supremacists also illegally share information with one another, and also with white supremacist journalists, in order
to uncritically repeat the.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So That's just you know, that's a very cool little fashy development.
Just another day in fashy Australia.
Yeah, police and conservative politicians and conservative media pundits all sharing racist information with each other to try and win elections.
Yeah,
seems good to me.
The kind of nice ending to this story is that Frankston, which was an ultra marginal seat, is now at like nearly 10% to Labor. It's like extremely safe. So that's how bad of a job that this like failed police officer did.
Well, he was awful. He went viral last year for an interview on Sky News, which I think was with David Spears.
Right.
And it was so... What were those guys from 7:30, the comedian guys? One of them is dead now. That's rude.
Oh, Clark and Dawes. Yeah.
Thank you. Wow, I should not be hosting an Australian politics podcast if I can't remember that off the top of my head. But it was some Clark and Dawes type shit, and the guy... And he was being grilled by David Spears about... building of a new power plant in Victoria,
right. Yeah, yeah.
And they were like just going back and forth. But wait, so what are you going to do? Oh, we're going to let the free market decide. Well, can't they do that already? Well, no, the government's stopping them. Well, how? Well, the free market will decide.
Yeah, just ran around. Right. It was incredible. Yeah.
Mm. This, the guy's an absolute joke.
And now also hopefully going to jail.
So. Yeah, basically the only thing he had going for him, as far as I can tell, is that he used to be a cop and he was currently a racist.
Yeah.
Which made him the prime liberal candidate. Anyway, let's hope that he gets the full force of his old mates.
Yep.
Full in the face. Full in his racist face. Speaking of racist faces, Tanya Plibersek. You want to run with that one?
Yeah, so well, now we have both a blurst take and a blessed take, I think.
It was the best of
takes.
It was the blurst of
takes.
You stupid monkey!
Tanya Plibersek, who was the deputy leader of the Labour Party under Bill Shorten, did some tweeting on January 25th, and she has basically proposed that...
That was the day of the hottest 100.
Oh, is that what happened that day? Yeah. She has proposed that all school children will be forced to recite a Pledge of Allegiance to Australia. And Zach, I know you're a patriot, so maybe could you just read out, you know, we can raise our hands.
Already there with you.
Yep.
My hand is clasped over my heart.
Mine sort of thrust outwards ahead of me with my arm flap. But anyway, that's fine. We can all be patriotic.
Everybody
in our own way.
Everybody can salute or hail anybody in any way that they see fit.
All right. Well, so, listeners, you can repeat along with Zach.
Yeah. So repeat after me, or more accurately, after Tanya Plibersek's tweet. From this time forward, I pledge my loyalty to Australia and its people, whose democratic beliefs I share, whose rights and liberties I respect, and whose laws I will uphold and obey. Plibersek goes on to say it's an elegant expression of what it takes to be a good citizen, of the rights we hold and the responsibilities we owe. There's a number of things to say about this, but I think first and foremost, it is just absolutely fucking absurd that this is what our politicians are choosing to talk about.
Yeah.
There are so many urgent, crushing concerns that are putting actual lives in danger in this country. And the opposition is choosing for some reason, try and stake their ground in this, like, racist no man's land that they... It's just an absolute, like, waste of everybody's fucking time.
I also think, like, Tanya Plibersek then went on to tweet at great length about how, no, this wasn't racist. Patriotism is great, and it's for everyone, and we all have to fucking love this terrible country. And, like, I feel like she knows what a terrible decision or, like, suggestion this was.
This was planned. It was released.
For fucking Australia Day, let's be as patriotic as possible.
It was in a speech. It was in an Australia Day speech that she wrote. And it was, she, like, provided the speech early to the media, so to kind of drum up a bit of support around it. Like, what the fuck kind of political strategy is this from Labor? It's time and time again we see them trying to occupy the same political territory as the Libs and just getting absolutely trounced.
Totally.
They never learn their fucking lesson. Yeah. Anyway.
That was the blessed take. Now we've got a blessed take.
Yeah, and I think, look, this is a really nice quick, neat summation of a lot of the stuff that is wrong with this. And this is a response from Maureen Faruqi in Parliament. Oh, yeah, we should mention that this shit was fucking voted on as well and passed in the upper house. Yeah.
Was it? I looked into that. I couldn't find it, but it was in the upper house. I looked through Hansa, but I couldn't
find
it.
Yeah.
I couldn't find any news. Okay.
Well, look, we'll look it up while this is playing.
Cool.
And then if I'm wrong, I'll correct myself after this. But anyway, this is what Maureen Faruqi had to say about it.
Instead of working to make students proud of our nation by leading on justice for First Nations people, by tackling the climate crisis, by ensuring that no Australian is left behind because of rising inequality, some in this place would rather have them recite a US-style pledge. This is a classic tactic of creating a problem where none exists. The bushfire crisis this summer has demonstrated the enduring strength of the Australian spirit in the community. We don't want to cheapen that spirit by forcing students to perform a jingoistic pantomime that fails to acknowledge Australia's settler colonial past and continued occupation. The Greens will not be supporting this motion.
Yep, jingoistic pantomime, that's about right.
I'm going to get that shit tattooed on my fucking forehead. But it, you know, in a way that makes it clear that I oppose.
It's like a sarcastic tattoo.
And yeah, the motion passed in the upper house to have this be recited in schools. 51 to 9, the only people who opposed it were the Greens. Everybody else, Labor, Centre Alliance, Jackie Lambie, they all backed it.
Yep.
Yeah, we've got a whole bunch of
fucking idiots running our fucking country.
Cooked morons deciding what our children have to do in their schools.
Yeah.
I say our children.
Yeah.
I'm starting to... Oh, God.
Now who's the patriot, Zach? Well, speaking of...
We need to secure a patriotically jingoistic free future... Oh, God. Okay, let's move on.
Speaking of how terrible the leaders of our country are, let's move on to our main course. I don't know if you can hear Zach drinking there, listeners, but he's just sculling the remainder of his corona. So, yeah, it's fucking coronavirus. I guess I wanted to talk a little bit about...
Sorry. No. do you want to give us a little bit of, like, a rundown on the kind of facts of the coronavirus situation? Well, like, frankly, I've avoided reading about it too much. We've avoided talking about it on the show. Obviously, this is not a new story, because the conversation around it is pretty fucking poisonous.
Yeah.
But also, it's one of those rapidly developing things where it's like, is it useful to have some kind of commentary or take on this at this point when it's kind of, you know, it's the medical situation? But just to give us a little bit of context, I know you did a bit of reading around what it actually is.
I've been reading a bunch of like medical articles and stuff, and I have to say I was a lot less worried about it before I started reading a whole lot about it, which is like kind of unfortunate, I guess. I would rather read more and be reassured, but
that doesn't happen with literally anything.
Yeah, you're right.
There are very few things you read more about and then you feel better afterwards.
That's a
except the Del Toro Quest.
Very good point. No, there's a drop-off point with Del Toro Quest as well.
Are you talking like season 3?
Yeah, yeah.
Fair, yeah. Okay, so there's no joy in this world.
Coronavirus. This is being called 2019 novel coronavirus, or you might see that written as 2019 NCOV. And
catchy stuff.
Yeah, it is. And so this is a novel coronavirus. It's a new one, but they're actually like a bunch of coronaviruses already, and there's like approximately 100% chance that anyone listening to this has already had a bunch of coronaviruses in their life, because they cause both the common cold and the common flu. And they're called coronaviruses. It's sort of a whole like genre of virus that when you look at it under an electron microscope has a like fuzzy halo around it, and that's called a corona.
Refreshing.
Yeah. So it's a virus, right? So a virus is a really interesting thing. There's a big debate about whether viruses are alive or not, because most of them don't have a metabolism, they don't have DNA, and they don't have cells. They're just like a little chunk of kind of RNA. Some of them have DNA, but most of them are RNA that like invades a cell of a host animal or plant or whatever, and then uses the machinery of that cell to reproduce itself. And they are not subject to antibiotics, which only work on bacteria. Okay, so we do have some antiviral agents, but most of them are not super effective, and they are definitely not effective on coronavirus, right? Which is why when you have a cold or a flu, you just have to have like bed rest and orange juice, right? There's no actual cures for this stuff.
It sounds like a great afternoon to me.
Yeah, I know. That's what I do when I'm not sick. Yeah. So there have been a couple of other big coronaviruses in the news that listeners may remember. So SARS is the big one, which is the severe acute respiratory syndrome. And then also MERS, which I don't remember hearing about, but that's the Middle East respiratory syndrome. And I suspect that the 2019 novel coronavirus is going to end up being called WARS for like a Wuhan acute respiratory syndrome, because
Hand it to him. That's a good acronym.
I made that up myself. I'm just putting that out there for the medical community.
That's a good acronym.
Yeah. So there are a bunch of endemic coronaviruses that humans get naturally, but these ones, SARS, MERS, and so on, and Hendra, and all these other viruses, have come from animal populations. And it seems most likely that they're from bats, though that's not entirely clear. Certainly rodents have a lot of coronaviruses. And in animals, normally coronaviruses cause gastrointestinal issues. But in humans, they nearly always cause respiratory disease. And so obviously with a cold and a flu, that's like the upper respiratory, so you get like snot and headaches and maybe fever. But SARS and MERS and now also coronavirus are deadly because they also infect the lower respiratory tract, so your lungs basically. And they can cause pneumonia, viral pneumonia, which is really, really hard to treat. So you can't treat it directly. As I said, antibiotics don't work. So the only kind of support that, the only kind of treatment that people with coronavirus can get is supportive medicine. So that's the orange juice and bed rest. And also once like the more severe lower respiratory stuff happens, like keeping people on oxygen pumps and that sort of thing. So you've got just about just over 31,000 cases worldwide, and of those, 638 people have died, and about 1,700 people have completely recovered. And I guess something that I've been seeing a lot on social media is that this has a much lower fatality rate than the common flu. And it seems like that is basically not a very reliable number, and that statistic is poor approximation done by people who don't understand epidemiology, like me when I said that on Facebook recently. But yeah, so basically we have to wait until this initial round of contagion is finished before we can actually calculate all of the important statistics that tell us how deadly the virus is. And most of the deaths have been in China.
Including one of the doctors who first warned about the disease.
That's right, yep.
Like the Chinese government attempted to shut
keep
down.
It quiet.
So he's technically a whistleblower.
Yeah. And actually, tragic. Despite that silence and like trying to shut it down from the Chinese government, the response from the international medical and epidemiological community to this outbreak has been really effective and impressive, which I know when there's like nearly 700 people dead, it maybe doesn't feel super effective, but after SARS broke out, there were a whole lot of these institutes around the world that developed a whole lot of sort of very quick reactive approaches to these kinds of outbreaks. And there's one in Australia in Melbourne that has been a world leader in terms of sequencing the genome of the virus. And also they're the first lab outside of China to reproduce the virus. And that's really important because at the moment, our best bet of trying to contain the spread of the virus is to develop a quick and cheap test for it. So I think we're going to get a bit more in a sec into the way that Australia has kind of locked down our borders, and a bunch of other countries have taken various measures as well. And that stuff is, in my opinion, justified to a certain extent at the moment because we don't have these tests. But once we have a test that can be sort of done in a few hours at any port or airport, we're going to be able to check people coming from regions where there've been confirmed cases and immediately send them to hospital or to other kind of containment facilities. And so it looks like that kind of test might be available in the next like 1 to 3 weeks. There's some progress being made with that now that the genome sequence is public and the virus has been reproduced. So there's basically never going to be a treatment for a coronavirus. We will hopefully be able to develop a vaccine. And so those are sort of that's the short-term goal is this test, and then the long-term goal is a vaccine.
So that's kind of one side or one angle of the story, I guess, or coming at it from a kind of technical perspective and understanding sort of where we're at. But the other very important side of the conversation is how we have kind of responded to this politically and socially, and that's what makes it an old poll thing and not just a global pandemic. So we have put in place a travel ban, a two-week-long travel ban for people coming from the province.
And also from mainland China. Anyone who's traveled out of mainland China in the last 14 days has to be quarantined for 14 days.
Yep. Yeah. And the other really awesome thing that we've done is we've put people on Christmas Island, mm-hmm. which might sound familiar to anybody who has heard of offshore detention before. The Christmas Island facility was shut down and then reopened, I think, last year to the tune of like it was almost like $200 million.
A huge amount of money. Yeah. And that was to prevent refugees from our offshore concentration camps from coming to the mainland for medical treatment. And in fact,
their response to the Medivac bill.
Yeah, yeah. And the only people who have been sent there for treatment are Priya Nadal.
Yes.
Yeah, who we covered a few weeks ago.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it was basically empty, and then now they've filled it up with Australian citizens and permanent residents, most of whom are Chinese nationals as well.
Yep.
And it's not a great look.
No.
There are lots and lots and lots of other ways to do this. In other countries, you know, New Zealand has set up situations where people who have come back to the country from Wuhan have been set up on military bases.
Yep.
And they have got things in place like making sure that the children are still able to continue their education, the people are able to continue their work by working remotely. In other words, they give them everything possible to try and continue their lives in as normal a way as possible until the 14-day danger period has died down.
Meanwhile, in Australia, we denied a woman a visa to come and see her son who was brain dead and
about to get turned off life support. Yeah. She did eventually,
she
after the story
visa,
got media attention and the friends of the young man who was in a car crash, they created a petition and petitioned the foreign minister, and eventually that woman managed to come.
But can you imagine if there was an outbreak of disease in Germany or New York?
And like, we were just like, no Germans.
Or you're all going into this, like, offshore detention camp. Like, there's a 0% chance.
White Australians coming from fucking, you know, somewhere in Indonesia, for example. And locking them up offshore. Like, it would never happen.
Yeah.
It would never. It would be an absolute political nightmare.
Yeah.
But because these people are Chinese, we just let it happen.
I think also with the Christmas Island thing, it's just like the people who live on Christmas Island don't want to be used as a fucking dumping ground for the people that the government find inconvenient. They didn't want to be a detention center for refugees. They didn't want to be a hospital for refugees who weren't allowed onto the mainland. They don't want to be a quarantine isolation place for people who have been to China recently.
No, because when I hear Christmas Island, I just think of it as a prison island.
Yeah.
I don't think of it as somewhere to go and check out endangered crabs, which is how you should think of it.
And actually, it's been really sad. A bunch of them have been killed by four-wheel drives driving people arriving from Wuhan to the quarantine facility.
It's so tragic. It crosses over into the absurd.
Yeah.
Yeah, but look, this is absolutely shocking. And to be clear, there are so many other ways that you can quarantine people effectively from
in their own homes, in a hospital.
It's a great example. Hospitals, hotels, military bases, which we are doing a little bit of as well.
Yeah.
But there are so many ways to make sure that these people don't feel like they are being discriminated against or their lives have to be put on hold until the government decides that they're safe to be let out into the general population. This pretty racist response from the government has emboldened racists all across this racist country to do racist shit. There's been all sorts of awful stories of the patronage of Chinese restaurants dropping massively and wait staff refusing to come in, for example.
Yeah.
There's been all sorts of fake news posts going around on Facebook, including one popular one from, which claimed to be from the Bureau of the Bureau of Diseaseology.
Uh-huh, of course.
Warning people not to go to suburbs in Sydney which have large Chinese populations like Parramatta and Burwood, and warning people not to eat products such as mie goreng,
which is from
fucking Indonesia, or what they call, quote, Chinese Red Bull, which is from fucking Thailand.
Yeah.
So stupid, but awful. And, like,
and, of course, there was a club who held a Corona Chinese New Year club night where Coronas were discounted and they gave people face masks at the door. And they got, like, abused on the internet, and rightly so, and have now announced that they are, quote, reassessing their branding team. Yeah. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, when we make Corona jokes, it's cute, though.
Yeah. We're less aggressively racist about it, I think. We're just actually literally drinking Coronas.
I did feel these Coronas
kind of bad when we purchased them. Yeah. That's all. That's my whole story there.
Other awful examples of people using this as an opportunity to display their latent racism is a Woolworths employee kicking out a Chinese customer from the supermarket and being lauded as a hero for it. And Harvey Norman telling people not to worry that they've got their mattresses are Australian made, not Chinese made. So you don't need to worry about getting a fucking virus from them. Like, the way that people's brains have just sort of flopped out of their ears and landed in a big squishy, wet explosion of flaccid racism is just so depressing and typical of this shithole country. Mm. Makes me really fucking angry. We've got two tweets here because, like, yeah, we're two white guys ranting about racism, and we wanted to give the perspective of people who have actually been directly affected by this. So, Noon, did you want to read these?
Yeah, so this is a tweet from Dr. Nadia Alam, who's at Doc Shmadia. And she said this: today my son was cornered at school by kids who wanted to, quote, test him for coronavirus just because he's half Chinese. They chased him, scared him, and made him cry. I was the same age when I was bullied for being Pakistani. It's 2020. I thought things had changed by now. Broken heart emoji.
And that was quote tweeted by Ria Liang, who you can find at Liang Ria on Twitter. She says, today a patient made jokes about not shaking my hand because of coronavirus in front of my team. I have not left Australia. This is not sensible public health precautions. This is racism.
Yeah, and I think that's about right. I said before that, like, I think that a lot of the measures about, you know, border control and stuff are relatively sensible, but I feel like, ideally, putting in sensible measures would make people feel like they can feel safe and not likely to be exposed and not, like, ramp up their racism to 11. And, like, I don't know. I don't really have, like, a coherent thought about this exactly, but I feel like somehow still being hugely aggressively racist,
whilst also, like, being in an extremely authoritarian manner, detaining people in an offshore fucking detention camp in order to spare people, like, from being infected.
The white part of our population. Like, yeah, I don't know.
It's like, we're already doing the most.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
we already have the racistest precautions of any country in the world about this virus. Like, maybe we could call it with the, like, interpersonal racism.
We know that racism is not rational, and that there are, you know, people out there who, like, there is, I guess, in a lot of sections of society, an understanding that it's not acceptable to publicly express that, even though you might secretly think it. And this is the kind of opportunity that people were waiting for. Matt Canavan style, racism is waiting in the wings. When's a good opportunity for me to slip it in under the fucking radar? And it's just so upsetting to see that this has been our response to that. So, look, there isn't really a coherent takeaway from this other than we're awful at this, and Australia is a dumb, backwards, racist country. Perhaps best exemplified.
Yeah, I was going to say by, this racist incoherence of our approach. Yeah,
perhaps best exemplified by the very politician who claimed in her maiden speech to Parliament that we were being, quote, swamped by Asians. She had a couple of... That's Pauline Hanson, by the way. didn't recognize that quote. just a stellar 1-2 punch of a tweet combo from her this week.
Should we play that sting?
You fucked up.
She fucked up. Yeah. She's one that you fucked up a couple times, I feel. She got stuck up all the room.
She's a proactive participant in the discourse and also a complete fucking idiot. So, I mean, that's just a prime recipe for
an Australian
being
celebrity.
Awarded that you fucked up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, what you said too. Yeah. So I'll read her first tweet. You read her follow-up. First tweet, all caps, close down all flights from China now. One Nation Australia leader, Pauline Hanson, has called on the federal government to ban flights from China to safeguard Australian citizens against the deadly coronavirus.
And then, a few days later, media release. One Nation Australia leader, Pauline Hanson, is urging the Prime Minister to urgently implement measures to counteract massive tourism downturns in North Queensland caused by coronavirus-related flight cancellations from China. Hashtag AusPol.
So, the moral of this story is that racism is a fucking self-own every time.
Yeah.
It's, I am, like, people are worried about Australians getting cut down by the coronavirus, that this is going to be some kind of massive health emergency. I think the fucking health emergency is stupidity than fucking racism. I am way more worried about these people accidentally sticking their hand in a fucking blender than I am about them catching the flu. So, anyway, we could probably
rant about those people for a lot longer. But yeah, that's also a good option.
Bad job, Australia. You fucking suck. And look, you're whatever. you're basically safe. Your government has done all of the horrible stuff that it deemed necessary to keep you safe. Yeah. You shouldn't feel the need to also boycott dumplings, you fucking idiots. All right. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook. Join the AusPol shitposting Facebook group. Drink a couple of Coronas. It'll make you feel great.
Go to a Chinese restaurant.
Go to a fucking Chinese food is delicious.
Yep.
Chinese food is delicious. Go patronize your local Chinese restaurant.
Also, maybe you, if you enjoyed us ranting about how much we hate this terrible country, you can support us on Patreon. You can hop on to patreon.com/AusPolSnackPod and for $1 a month, sorry, $1 US, because we're not patriots here.
Globalists.
Yeah, that's right. You get an extra episode every month, bonus episode, and we think that they're normally pretty good. So yeah, hop on. And maybe also tell a friend about us.
That would be super helpful. That's probably at this stage the most helpful thing that you can do. If you like the show and you want to support us and you want to help more people hear our incoherent ramblings, I promise to give Nu more beer in future. Please just let someone know. Send them our way.
Yeah. It seems like from last week, first time shitpost of the week, when Lou Olson told a bunch of their friends about the show and they all joined AusPol Shitposting Facebook group and they listened to the show, and that's real nice. So
the community grows, the saga continues, and the plot thickens.
Ness, if you're listening, you're now legally obliged to do a hype post. Yeah,
you contribute plenty to the group.
No,
already.
It's true. You're
Don't
doing great.
Anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you very much for tuning in.
Yeah.
That's probably it for us this week. Catch us next week when Noon is going to do a 1.5-hour breakdown of all the reasons why you should vote Yang. Keep on snacking in the free world.
God damn it.
Say crunch, crunch.
Crunch, crunch! Fuck Andrew Yang.